Welcome to the Untold Civil War. It has been a hectic month. I'm sorry for the delay in content. I was in Gettysburg for Remembrance Day, recording a bunch of stuff to bring to you, the listeners. I filmed the parade, I went on the battlefield, had dinner with the reenactors of the Fighting 69th Regiment, which included a special toast, and I went Civil War relic hunting with Ron Connington of Military Images magazine. All that content will be coming out soon on the YouTube channel, so please use the link in the show notes to check out the YouTube channel. Subscribe so you don't miss out on any video content. But to wet your whistle in the meantime, here it is Sarah Byerly on the civilian experience at Gettysburg. So put on your headphones, lean back in that recliner, and let's delve into some untold Civil War. Tonight, I sit with Sarah K. Byerly. Sarah is managing editor at Emerging Civil War and works in battlefield preservation. She will be discussing the often looked over civilian experience during the Battle of Gettysburg. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thanks, Paul, for inviting me. It's nice to be here with you.
Well, just to get started, I would like to know, how did or when did the Civil War bug bite you? We all have that story.
Yes, absolutely. So for me, it was when I was 8 years old. I was already interested in American history, fascinated by it from a very early age. But when I was 8, we were doing a unit study on American Civil War, and it was the illustrations and the photographs of the beautiful dresses that the ladies wore that caught my attention, particularly as a little girl. So that's where my interest started. But then I read a picture book about Abraham Lincoln and the Gettysburg Address and thought that was really interesting. I had an older cousin who was interested in the military side of the Civil War, and he started loaning me both books of paintings by Mort Kunstler and some of the other famous Civil War artists, as well as age-appropriate biographies, and that really pulled me into the stories of leaders and introduced me a little bit to the military history. I kept reading, got really interested in military history, then circled back to the civilians for my capstone project in college, and right now I kind of have a blend of interest in the military and civilian interactions. That's something that I research on my own. It's absolutely fascinating to me, and it has led to some really interesting ways to explore it with research and professionally as well.
Well, you're here to talk about Gettysburg specifically. Now, when did you get involved with learning about the story of Gettysburg, and how did Gettysburg come into your life, really?
So Gettysburg, I learned about it back when we were doing that unit study. 8 years old, when I was about 9, I wrote a short story about a family, fictional family, who lived at Gettysburg and the battle came, and kind of imagine a very childlike telling of a story kind of along the lines of Little House on the Prairie. And then soldiers came to town and there was a big battle and there were some soldiers who got hurt and they interacted with the family, but a very simplistic story. And there's a line that I wrote in that early version of the story. And then the war ended and everything went back to normal. And as I got older, I started to realize that's not exactly what happened. The civilian story is much more complex at Gettysburg and at many other battlefields of the American Civil War, and really on the home front as a whole. But the idea of civilians at Gettysburg really stayed with me. And when I was older, after I finished college, I went back and I spent a year researching Gettysburg civilians, and then actually wrote a historical fiction novel, being able to incorporate some of that research I had done and, you know, use some of the same names from that early children's story. But the battle did not end and life goes back to normal anymore in that story. There was a lot more to share and to let the readers work through along with the characters.
Well, I love that you kept some of the names just to pay tribute to where it all started, right?
Yes. Yes. But there's one or two lines that I copied over just for the sake of it. But that's only the finished, more accurate novel is available, not the original story.
That's fantastic. But let's get into Gettysburg right now.
Sure.
You know, the meat and potatoes here. So Gettysburg at the start of the Civil War, do we know about how the populace felt about the war? Do we know how many troops they furnished for the war? And was there civilian support for the war, or did the civilians not support the war? I know in New York City it was very complicated. Was it complicated in Gettysburg as well?
Right, so that's a great question. And I'm going to kind of peel back a few layers of it as I try to answer your questions. So one thing that's really important in Gettysburg's history, both when we look at Gettysburg as a town and a community, which it is, first of all, then as a home front, once 1861 and the Civil War begins, and then as a battlefield, when we get to 1863, one of the really important things to remember is the location. So Gettysburg is about 7 miles from the Maryland-Pennsylvania state lines. So that's the Mason-Dixon line. So keep in mind there's escaped slaves seeking freedom using Underground Railroad. It's difficult to track, but there's evidence that the Gettysburg community had several hiding places or maybe even official stations on the Underground Railroad. So you do have a community that is interacting with some of the causes of the Civil War, including the primary one, slavery. And, you know, they are very aware of what's happening. You also have freedmen settling in the Gettysburg community and becoming part of this town, of this area. It doesn't mean they necessarily have an easy experience, but that is happening. And that's going to influence how white Americans living in Gettysburg are also going to think about the Civil War as it happens. You have Congressman Thaddeus Stevens, who resides in the town of Gettysburg. So a majority of people in Gettysburg are going to lean pro-Union when we see the Civil War happening. Now, just like most towns, most communities in the Civil War, you're going to have differing opinions. So there were certainly some in the community who thought that the South was right for one reason or another. You even have a few young men from the Gettysburg community who will go south and join a Virginia regiment. So that's a little bit interesting. And then you have a little bit of civil war within the civilian community. And how much of it is legendary, how much of it is true, can be a bit of a question. But you do have John Burns, the famous or infamous civilian who grabs his gun on July 1st and is going to go out and fight with the federal troops on Seminary Ridge. You know, he had been accusing people of being Southern spies or Confederate sympathizers. There's stories that spring up about Jenny Waite that she might have been. And so you kind of have, I think of it as you have those local, maybe local politics or neighbors in conflict with each other, and maybe an easy way to accuse or maybe even besmirch someone's memory is to kind of accuse them of being a Confederate sympathizer. So, but on the whole, as far as I have researched, Gettysburg has a large population that supports the Union. That doesn't mean that Civil War is on their mind every waking moment. I think sometimes we have a misconception that everyone was thinking about the Civil War and the armies and all of that all the time. However, Gettysburg is in a bit of a unique situation because they have been scared prior to 1863, particularly in the fall of 1862, October 1862, you have Confederate cavalry commander Jeb Stuart raiding up into Pennsylvania, the Chambersburg Raid, and he's going to actually pass to the west of Gettysburg. He will not come to Gettysburg. He's swinging through the area, though, and you have civilians that are really scared that the Confederates are going to come into their community. And this happens on a few other occasions as well. But to circle back into your question about did Gettysburg furnish troops for the Union cause? Absolutely. So men from the Gettysburg community enlist in a couple of different Pennsylvania units, primarily the 87th Pennsylvania Regiment and the 138th Pennsylvania Regiment. You'll also have men who are active in the emergency militia and the emergency cavalry. And those last two units are ones that are going to be called out if the community is under threat. So you will see emergency troops form and do things like fall trees across roads. They might go out and kind of be watching Confederates moving into the Gettysburg area in the end of June 1863.
The emergency units you mentioned, are those the famous units that, you know, from the movie of Gettysburg, they say, I thought they were just a bunch of militia. And, you know, they charge on the first day and realize it's Buford's cavalry. Is that who we're talking about there?
A little bit. So you do have this emergency militia, and militia is that long-standing tradition in American history at that time. You know, so local civilians coming together, It's kind of Minuteman style, but it's a little more organized than that in the 1850s and 1860s. So you do have these emergency troops that have come out on June 26th, 1863, when Confederates actually arrive in the Gettysburg community for the first time. You have a unit of emergency cavalry that's fleeing down the Baltimore Pike. And one of their members, his name is George Sandow, he is shot and killed. And he's, don't think he lived in Gettysburg, but he was local to the area, to the county, if I remember correctly. And so here is someone who's in that emergency unit and he's killed right in the community or right in the county area in this attempted defense. Let's go out and see if we can stop the Confederates or at least see what's going on. So they're definitely part of the story. The emergency militias, though, don't really have a reputation for standing up and fighting. There's some wonderful, kind of funny accounts. Maybe they're not so wonderful for the people involved, but of these units and trying to confront the Confederates at other points in the Pennsylvania campaign, and they end up, according to these accounts, running and hiding in very unique places behind the woodpile, in the chicken coop. Apparently, one guy climbed in a bake oven that was not on or didn't have a fire in it, I guess would be the way to say it. But there's some very interesting accounts that come out of the emergency militia. And of course, we'd have to ask, who's writing them and, is this a trustworthy account? But there's some delightful ones out there.
Let's take a moment to recognize our sponsor, Civil War Trails. They are the leading organization that is marking those sites which the grand armies of the Civil War marched, camped, and fought on. Check them out at the link in the show notes.
Well, you mentioned some names such as Jenny Wade and John Burns. Could you talk about those characters and maybe a few more of the actual civilians of Gettysburg?
Sure. I'll start with those two since they're probably the most famous. But I pulled together a list of a few others that I wanted to be sure we mentioned today. So Jenny Wade is probably one of the most famous Gettysburg civilians. She's a young woman and she is killed on the morning of July 3rd, 1863, probably by a sharpshooter's bullet while she's baking bread for her family. Her death is generally seen as the only civilian death at the time of the battle. There's some question of that. There may have been some other people that died of causes, but she's definitely killed by a military projectile and becomes rather famous in the community for her tragic end. John Burns, as we mentioned, he's an older gentleman. He said he was a veteran of the War of 1812, and much to his wife's chagrin, he puts on an old blue jacket and gets some sort of old musket and heads out towards Seminary Ridge. Some accounts say that his wife, followed him up the road, or at least was yelling after him that he was an old fool. He does see some action. There are several units fighting out on Seminary Ridge who say their officers say that they saw him. Some say they saw him doing some firing. He ends up wounded and has to go back home. He will later meet President Lincoln on November 19th, 1863, when the Gettysburg Address is given. After the address and the ceremony at the cemetery, he's seen walking on one of the streets with Lincoln as they go to a church to hear an address by Charles Anderson later in the day. So he's also pretty famous, and he will rest on those laurels for the rest of his life, that he went out and fought those rebels and he met President Lincoln. A few other civilians that I've particularly enjoyed learning about. Sarah Broadhead kept a really wonderful short journal, and she published it actually during the war. And she writes it mostly in real time, as much as we can tell, so that she's kind of recording things as they're happening. And you really get a sense of the uncertainty that she's feeling about what's her husband going to do? How is she and their small child going to survive? And she has some really beautiful writing in there, as well as just that sense of what it could have been like or what it was like in the civilian community as a huge battle erupts in their town and the farm fields around it. Tilly Pierce Allman, that's her married name. She is 14 years old at the time of the battle. And when she's a bit older, when she's married, she writes some reminiscences about the battle, which are interesting. And I found them helpful for kind of engaging, particularly teen girls in the story about the battle and, what it would have been like, because she tells us about the uncertainty uncertainty. Now, she does write with hindsight, and she does really emphasize some of her famous encounters with people that we now recognize as famous military figures. So, but still, a valuable account, helpful perspective. David Wills, and I like to mention some of the gentlemen as well, because civilians aren't just women, they aren't just children, you have civilian men. So civilians are guys not in uniform, not in the military. So David Wills is trying to keep his family safe during the battle, and he is going to be so instrumental in helping to establish Gettysburg National Cemetery and really help to bring forward that plan and be very instrumental in setting up the ceremony at which Lincoln gives his famous Gettysburg Address. Sally Myers is another young woman. She keeps a journal. She becomes involved in taking care of wounded men. She goes to a church, I believe it's on July 1st, to see if she can help. Doctors have said they need help. She has a very startling, very disturbing experience to her. One of the first wounded men she sees, she, you know, kneels down and is asking if she can help him. And he says, "There's nothing you can do for me. I'm going to die." And it just shatters her world. And she goes out and she sits on the stairs or the steps of this church and just cries. A very normal, very human response, what we would expect to some extent. But then she gets up and she goes back in. She goes back to this man and starts trying to help him. And eventually she moves him to her family's home and takes care of him until he passes away. And she writes about these experiences. And the other parts of her journal on both sides of the battle are really helpful for getting a look at what life was like before the war comes to the community and what it's like as the community and as Sally Myers herself is trying to recover from this experience. Probably another semi-famous woman from the Gettysburg community is Elizabeth Thorne, and she lives in the gatehouse of Evergreen Cemetery, which is the civilian cemetery, which exists on, you guessed it, Cemetery Hill. And so she lives there. Her husband was the caretaker. His name was Peter Thorne, and he had actually enlisted in the 138th Pennsylvania Infantry Regiment. So he is not there with his family at the time of the battle. So Elizabeth is there. She has her elderly parents who had immigrated from Germany and brought her to America. And she has her little children. And Elizabeth is pregnant at the time of the battle. And Union General Oliver Howard comes. He's making his headquarters around the cemetery gatehouse, and he and his officers eventually tell them, "You're going to need to leave." So she refugees down the Baltimore Pike and doesn't return until after the battle ends. But when she returns, the area where her home is has been so heavily fought over. There's dead horses in the yard. There's dead soldiers who have not yet been buried. And she is the caretaker of the cemetery. So she and her father work to bury some of these fallen soldiers in the civilian cemetery. She does give birth to her daughter in November 1863, a few days before, or I think it's a couple of weeks, actually. I think it's the beginning of November. So a little bit before the new invasion of people coming to see the dedication of the National Cemetery. But her story is memorialized in a statue that now stands in Evergreen National Cemetery, a tribute to both her story and also representative of so many other civilian women. Two others that I want to mention very quickly, and they are civilian men. So Basil Biggs, he's an African-American man, and he and his crew of workmen who he puts together, they help to disinter the fallen Union soldiers, put their remains in caskets, and then rebury them in the National Cemetery. So here you have three African-American men helping to rebury and bring honor to these fallen Union soldiers, which is something very interesting to think about, all the layers of that story there. And one more, free African-American man, Abraham Bryan. If you've been to Gettysburg, you have probably stood on the land of his farm, whether you knew it or not. His farm is basically right at the high watermark on Cemetery Ridge. So Cemetery Ridge is a really rocky kind of area, not the very best of the farmland. And it was often what the African-American farmers would be able to afford, or they might rent to farm those areas. So his farm is right there, right at the center of it all. And just think about the destruction that he's going to find when he comes back to his farm, like so many others in the Gettysburg community. So those are a few civilian names, little snippets of their stories. There are so many, and there are some great resources that I think we'll talk about later in the podcast for where you can find out more and hopefully find your favorite Gettysburg civilians.
Christmas is coming up, and what did you get for that Civil War buff in the family? Not sure where to shop? Try the Excelsior Brigade. Nothing beats the thrill of owning a real Civil War relic, a real piece of history. The Civil War buff in your family will remember that Christmas always. Link in the show notes.
I love it. I love it. You did a great job of presenting and introducing us to these characters. One thing you were just getting into is sort of painting the scene for us, you know, the scene of Gettysburg, the battlefield. When I lived in Paris for a little bit, I used to walk through Paris and I would see little plaques around and it would say, you know, at this corner, resistance fighter so-and-so, you know, fought to the last, or unfortunately, resistance fighter over here, he was executed at this location. And really, when you walk through there, you can see, you know, how the Battle of Paris was fought during World War II. We don't really have that experience here in America because World War II, besides probably Pearl Harbor, wasn't really fought on our on American soil. American battlefields for the Civil War, we have that connection with. When we walk Gettysburg, are we going to see some of the remains? Are there remains of cannonball destruction? Are there remains of bullet scars? Can we still see them today, or is that just something too long ago?
Well, yes and no. So a word of warning, when you're going through town, you will see what looks like cannonballs and walls. You'll see damage. Some of it may go back to the battle. Some of it is part of Gettysburg's layers of history, because as tourism, even in the days of the Civil War veterans, as they're returning post-war, memorializing, putting monuments at Gettysburg Battlefield, people realized that their homes or their shops became much more interesting if it looked like they had a cannonball in them. So just keep that in mind. there is ongoing research, I understand, with various groups around Gettysburg as to the accuracy of some of that. But there is somewhere, and it's fairly easy to access. It's actually out on the battlefield, and you can see real artillery damage. So that is out at the Trossel Farm. So out in the area where Dan Sickles and the Third Corps fight on the second day of the Battle of Gettysburg, if you go to the Trossel Farm and look at the barn on the side that's facing the road, in fact, you can even see it as you drive by, there is damage to the bricks in the upper part of the barn. And I was talking with a ranger up at Gettysburg, and he confirmed that is battle damage, and that is confirmed battle damage. You can even see it in the photograph of the Trossel Farm taken shortly after the battle. So that's one of my favorite places to point to if you're really looking for some battle damage. Also, there's signs in certain areas of town, plaques, things like that. So if you are walking through Gettysburg, look around on the buildings, look around for some of those interpretive panels, because some of those signs are going to help tell that richer story of Gettysburg as a community. And Adams County Historical Society is a big part of that. And also out at the Abraham Bryan Farm, the National Park Service has some interpretive panels about his family and their experience as African Americans in the Gettysburg community and in the battle and aftermath.
You mentioned something earlier that I found really interesting about the home front versus the battle front. Can we talk a little bit about that, about comparing the home front experience of what we see in like more modern conflicts like World War II, and how we look at that versus how it was during the Civil War?
If I get off on the wrong tangent here, reel me back in. So home front is, I think of the home front as something that is established when in this, I'll start with Civil War experience. The home front is established when the volunteer armies are assembled. So when you have men going and enlisting, you are also, you're creating these volunteer armies, but you're also creating a home front. Those families, the loved ones that they leave behind in the civilian setting, we've just created a home front. So thinking of it that way, it makes the home front a lot bigger. It makes home front much, much larger than the Gettysburg community that experiences war directly, or Winchester, Virginia, that changes hands about 70 times during the war. It's also encompassing the larger civilian story, because what happens on the battlefields of the Civil War, the battlefields of any war, any conflict, is going to directly affect the home front. So when a soldier is killed, when a soldier is wounded, that is going to be news that is going to have a devastating effect on those civilians on the home front. And there are, we could call them echoes, we could think of them in a lot of different ways. I like to think of them as echoes. So what happens on the battlefield echoes to the home front. Now, in a situation like Gettysburg, like Fredericksburg, Virginia, which is going to see urban fighting in December 1862, like Petersburg, like Atlanta. I mean, we've got lots of examples. This, the experience of war on the doorstep or war invading a home directly is not limited to Gettysburg by any means. And I think probably all of your listeners are familiar with that idea, but sometimes Gettysburg gets in that pinnacle of our mind. And it's like, remember, this happens in a lot of other places. So at Gettysburg, there's the military scene that many of us are probably familiar with, which is producing thousands of casualties, dead, wounded, missing. And those casualties are laying in the field, the farm fields, they're laying in the farmhouses, they are on the streets, they are in the churches. This is war laid on the doorstep of an entire community. And it's, as we might imagine, as we read in the accounts, it has a big effect on those who experience it. And now bringing it from the Civil War, looking at other conflicts, you have home fronts all across history that are affected by what happens militarily. And you also have war invading the home fronts and all these other conflicts. And, you know, we're seeing it right now. If you've been following the conflict, the conflict in Ukraine, you know, there are definite parallels because in a horrible, tragic way, war changes, but it doesn't change. There is still the death. There is still the destruction. One thing that is maybe a little different is in more modern conflicts and also in previous conflicts, it depends on the nature of the conflict, you'll have home front specifically targeted. That's not really happening at Gettysburg. There may be other communities in the Civil War that would make an argument, oh, we were specifically targeted for one reason or another. But at Gettysburg, you don't really, like, the town of Gettysburg is not burned. They aren't doing target practice on civilian homes. Yes, there's going to be cannon shots that hit homes. There's going to be bullets that fly into people's homes. But it's a little bit different than what we might see either on other Civil War battlefields or in other military conflicts. So it's kind of looking at where does Gettysburg and the civilian military interaction fit into the big scene of the Civil War? And then where does it fit into the broader picture of military history as a whole?
Running out of things to stream? Want more history documentaries and period films and shows to watch? Have you tried History Fix? I just watched a great documentary on the Lost Battalion of World War I. Sign up using the link in the show notes.
I think you did a fabulous job of laying that out very clearly.
Well, thank you.
Oh, that was great. But of course, as you mentioned, although maybe not targeted, Gettysburg did suffer battlefield damage, right? Battle damage.
Absolutely.
So civilians, how could they get, were they able to get compensated for the damage on their farms? Could they petition the government, federal, state? How did that work?
Right. That's a great question. So short answer, yes. Long answer, not always successful. So there was the Federal Claims Commission. So farmers, others who had property destroyed due to the battle or taken for use by the federal army, by the U.S. Army, you could submit claims for the damages. These claims can be really helpful to researchers who are trying to get a better picture of the economic value of things that were destroyed, things that were taken, be it the crops in the field, the blankets from the beds of the civilian homes, all kinds of things are on these lists. And they would be submitted, and sometimes compensation would come, sometimes it would not. It was very not always fair, at least according to the civilian perspective, and to some extent from our modern perspective as well. But there was that option. One of the things that really bothered some of the civilians, particularly Nathaniel Light, whose farm is out kind of along the Baltimore Pike, kind of Culp's Hill area. It's probably the easiest way to define where he's at. His farm is destroyed. His house is turned into a field hospital. He says conditions in the house are so bad that his family was getting sick to go inside, even after the field hospital scene had left. It's just blood stained. And he goes to the battlefield, probably not too far from where he lives, battle areas, and he starts collecting, you know, some blankets and some different items that the army has left behind. And he's hoping, you know, maybe he can sell them, maybe he can get a little bit of money, maybe he just wants to use the blankets, you know, for his family, since all their stuff is pretty much ruined. And he ends up getting arrested by the federal provost guard. And he's not supposed to be taking that because technically it's U.S. military property. So he's seen as thieving from the U.S. Army. Fortunately, a few of his neighbors come and testify on his behalf. And he says, I had no idea. I wouldn't steal like this. I'm just trying to find a way to provide for my family. A couple of those neighbors come, testify to his good character, and he's eventually released. But it's this challenge. Like, if everything of your livelihood has been destroyed, how do you care for your family? And these are real challenges, real questions that people in the Gettysburg community are facing, in addition to this huge loss of human life that, you know, they're dealing with, all of these wounded men who've been left behind as well.
Well, it's very clear to me, you know, listening to the stories you've just told, that while we often look at just the soldier experience, there's no doubt that the civilian experience sort of makes them veterans of the battle themselves, in a way, because they were there, they witnessed it, they experienced it. Were any of them able to attend reunions, or were they recognized at any of these famous reunions that we see pictures of?
Right. So the civilians are not veterans in the military sense, but certainly veterans of experience. So I see what you're saying there, and it's an interesting way to think of it, for sure. One civilian who we can definitely point to, and there would be others, because this is a community that's impacted by war, but it's also a community where a lot of people stay. These are their homes. They find a way to stay. They find a way to rebuild. Certainly there's some that leave, but there's a lot who stay, and they're going to see all of these changes that continue in the Gettysburg community, and changes that we observe even to this day, because almost as soon as the battle ends, tourism begins at Gettysburg, which people are going to have mixed feelings about. I certainly do, to some extent. But you have the relic hunters showing up, and they're trying to find bullets. They're trying to find this. They're trying to find that, while they're still wounded lying in the field hospitals, while the dead are still unburied. So you have people seeking some sort of experience at Gettysburg, because it's seen, and rightly so, as a very historic, a turning point event in what's happened. So you're going to have civilians that experience that, and ones that stay, and then they're going to be seeing, you know, veterans return and these monument dedications and things like that. One of my favorite stories involves Josephine Miller, and in the book, it's compiled by Timothy H. Smith. It's called Farms at Gettysburg, The Fields of Battle. And it's a collection of images published by the Adams County Historical Society. And he highlights a really great example. So a young woman named Josephine Miller, she was about 27 at the time of the battle. Where she lived was out along the Emmitsburg Road. And she spends the battle baking of barrels of flour into bread. And then you have soldiers coming to the house and getting this bread because they're hungry. And they remembered this. And so when their unit comes back and they're in the area, she's there. And she's actually, there's a photograph taken of her with members of the 1st Massachusetts Infantry when they dedicate their monument along Emmitsburg Road. And she's there in the picture with the veterans. And then William Tipton, who's the photographer, he gets creative and he borrows a stove and he gets a loaf of bread. And he takes her picture with the stove, with the loaf of bread, right alongside this monument. And it's that tribute moment. She's recognized for what she did at the battle. And to some extent, she's memorialized in this photography that was taken. And I think that's a really neat story, where we have a name, we have a story, we even have an image that reflects back to what Josephine Miller did during the battle. And then you do have her interacting with veterans as they're returning to Gettysburg and trying to make sense of everything that happened there.
To me, it also shows how much, when you're campaigning, a soldier campaigning during the Civil War, how much a simple loaf of bread means. that you're willing, when you come back to that location, to create a monument, take that picture. It must have meant so much to them.
Absolutely. And that's one of the things at Gettysburg. I mean, you do have Union soldiers who they haven't had issued rations for a long time. It depends on the Corps, but some have not been in contact with their supply wagons for a while. So you've got some pretty hungry guys. And, you know, civilians are literally running out of food as their homes are taken over as field hospitals, as units are coming through, because they're trying to provide what's needed, or it's just being taken as well. And it's all these little things. When we think about a community impacted by war, water supply, clean water supply becomes a real problem in Gettysburg during the battle and afterwards. You have wells that are running dry. They're being pumped dry as these soldiers are trying to fill their canteens, as doctors are trying to get clean water for these field hospitals. And then the natural water sources like the springs, the creeks, those are getting contaminated. And we don't need to go into the details of it, but you've got thousands of men, you've got thousands of animals, plus you have dead, plus you have wounded. There's basically no clean water in Gettysburg. And that is one of those little things that it's so easy to not think about when we look at the broad military picture, or even the detailed military picture of what happens. But think about that soldier in your favorite unit. What's his experience? Can he get clean water? What's happening? Is this the water that he drinks? Is that going to make him sick the next day? Things like that. It's touch, sight, taste, all the sensory things of war are things that we don't really want to think about because it is so awful, but it is part of the experience of both soldiers and civilians in Civil War battles.
1863 Designs is the leader in Civil War graphic design. They make some great Civil War themed stickers, but their designs don't stop there. Reach out and they can do custom designs for your Civil War roundtable, reenactment group, university history club, and much more. Link in the show notes.
Well, I'm not sure if this episode will air before or after Remembrance Day. I know that visiting Gettysburg at any time is good and very important to do. You are the expert here. What can we tell, you know, our listeners if they're visiting Gettysburg? What tips might we have for them?
Sure. So I tried to give this some thought, and I think people go to Gettysburg for a variety of reasons, and I would just encourage you, when you're at Gettysburg, whatever's bringing you to Gettysburg, whether it's fiction story that sparked your interest, and when Little Round Top reopens, you cannot wait to walk Little Round Top, or something like that, or maybe you're there to study a particular regiment that's really important to you, take a few minutes when you're out on Gettysburg battlefield and just look around. And there are so many places on the battlefield where you will see civilian structures that have been preserved, that have been restored. And just take a minute to think about what might that experience have been for the civilians. We know the names of the people who own these properties. If you're able, if you have time, do a little bit of research on their experiences. It really adds another layer to the understanding of the military history. And one thing that was really poignant to me was sometimes you can stand at places of the battlefield and you stand behind a cannon and you start looking and you realize, where's that cannon pointing? It's pointing right down toward the Kadori farm. Okay, it's pointing toward the Kadori farm because there's Confederates advancing that way, but it's also pointing toward the home of a civilian family. So the civilian story is there. And I would just encourage you, as you're exploring the military history, take a few minutes and look around. Think about what civilians might have been in the line of fire. Did they refugee away? Were they hiding in their cellars? You know, what is their experience in this bigger story as well?
Absolutely. And it's very important to shed light on these untold stories that we like to bring on the show, of course. And you've done a great job of that. But before I let you go, though, there's one thing I wanted to get into, just because I'm a big fan of historical fiction. Okay. I know you've written some historical fiction, as we talked about. So can you talk about historical fiction as a tool to tell the history story, the Civil War story? Is it an effective tool? And we might get into some other things in a minute here, but that's what I would like to ask first.
Sure. So the way I look at it is historical fiction can be very effective for getting people interested in history of any era. And my hope is that historical fiction is well-researched and presenting accurate information. People write, people read historical fiction for a variety of reasons, but I really appreciate and have always tried to write historical fiction that is well-researched, that has, you know, stacks of files of, we could cite it if we wanted, but you don't cite in fiction. But bringing that history into a story that is easy to read, that is fairly easy to engage with, and pulls people in and makes them want to learn more, but also helps them learn more along their journey through reading the story. So the Gettysburg book that I wrote is called Blue, Gray, and Crimson, A Story of Civilian Courage at Gettysburg. It's available on my website, sarahkbyerly.com. You can also get it on Amazon. And I wanted to share that Gettysburg civilian story in a way that was easy to read. We can read the 300-page books about civilian experience during the Civil War, but that's not everyone's cup of tea, and that's okay. So what's a way to share this story in a way that's maybe a little more readable? And I know there's lots of other historical fiction authors that feel the same way. I mean, probably one of the most famous Civil War historical fiction authors is Jeff Sharrett. Father wrote Killer Angels, he writes Gods and Generals, and a whole host of other Civil War fiction books. And there are lots of people that I've talked to, and in when I ask, how did you get interested in the Civil War? Oh, I read a Sharon novel. That's really fantastic. It can be that kind of gateway that gets people interested. It's less intimidating, I think. It's less intimidating to read a story than it is to read some really heavy cited, you know, nonfiction. And, you know, maybe historians need to write nonfiction a little bit easier to read. And that's something that I'm working on as I now work on some nonfiction projects. So just some thoughts on it there.
You have probably seen the forage cap I wear when I host this show. You might notice it was very plain. However, thanks to the badge maker, it is plain no longer. He made an awesome Untold Civil War cap pin in period font for me. He can fix your forage caps too. Check the link in the show notes to see all his fantastic wares.
Now, you did mention the research that goes into these, and I think a lot of people have to realize that when you write historical fiction, good historical fiction, there is a bunch of research that is done. Don't think it's all imagination. But is there a right and wrong way to do this? Is there something, if you sat down with somebody who said, I want to write historical fiction on the Civil War, is there something you would say to them like, okay, well, before you get started, you need to know not to do this? What is the big no? Is there a big no?
I don't know. That's a big question. But one thing that I have strived to do, and I know I've not done it perfectly in my historical fiction writing, but I was conscious of it and made efforts to be as accurate as possible in this way. Know the context of the time, the place, the era, the people, the community. There is historical fiction out there that gets a lot of things right about the Battle of Gettysburg itself, but the details, as the saying goes, the devil's in the details. You know, the uniforms are made out of wool. What happens to wool when it gets wet? You know, the layers of clothes that women and girls wore. What does it feel like to carry buckets of water? You know, and sometimes we can have those experiences as researchers, as writers, you know, getting involved in reenacting or different types of living history demonstration can be really powerful and really helpful. And that's something that I still will occasionally pursue, even now that I'm doing nonfiction writing, which is obviously a different genre. You approach it differently, but you know, what is it like? What does it look like when it is a massive rainstorm on Newmarket Battlefield or things like that? And really trying to get into what were things like? What's historically accurate? How do people speak? You know, where did they get things? How did they get things? How long did it take for a letter to arrive? You know, all those things weave in and make a stronger historical picture in the story. And that's something that I love to see in historical fiction that I read. And it's certainly something that I strove for in the historical fiction that I've written and published.
Fantastic. And I know we've just mentioned your book. And of course, I would recommend everyone to go to your website. I'll put a link in the show notes, of course, so people can click and go directly there. But is there any other reading that you would recommend for someone who's trying to learn more about the civilian experience?
I brought a stack of books from my shelf. So Hopefully it's not too many, but it's hard to pick and choose. And there are, you know, there's always more books coming out. So there may be some that should be on my list that I still need to find out about. But here are some of my favorites that I found most helpful in my research, and then also going to Gettysburg and working on new projects there with my job and things like that. So I mentioned it earlier, Farms at Gettysburg, Fields of Battle. It has photos. It has really detailed captions. It's compiled by Timothy H. Smith and Adams County Historical Society, one that I highly recommend. Another one, and I am known to carry this one in my backpack when I'm up at Gettysburg. It's called A Vast Sea of Misery. And it is, the subtitle is A History and Guide to the Union and Confederate Field Hospital at Gettysburg, and it's by Gregory Coco. It's been reprinted by Savis Beatty. I have one of the more original ones, but very helpful. Almost any building in town, the farms out on the fields. This has detailed history. It has primary source quotes and accounts of those structures, of those locations, and how they were used in the medical sense during the battle itself. If you're looking for an overview book on aftermath at Gettysburg or civilian experience, this one by George Sheldon is very good. It's called When the Smoke Cleared at Gettysburg, The Tragic Aftermath of the Bloodiest Battle of the Civil War. Good overview book if you're looking for more details on what we've been talking about. One of my favorite civilian resources, this one might be a little harder to find. It's a large book. It's almost like a tabletop book, but it's called Firestorm at Gettysburg, Civilian Voices. And it's by Jim Slade and John Alexander. It has a lot of unique photos of civilians who lived in the area, and it basically works through in chronological order about what happened using a lot of primary sources or a narrative that is constructed from the primary sources from a vast array of historical figures who wrote about their experiences at the battle. Definitely one of my top favorites. Sarah Broadhead's journal is published out there. It may even be available on Google Books. I haven't looked in a while. At Gettysburg by Tilly Pierce, a bit of a classic on my shelf, one of my favorites. And then these are a little more on aftermath of battle, might be a little heavy. They're definitely a little dark, but Debris of Battle, The Wounded of Gettysburg by Gerard A. Patterson, a good overview book. Strange and Blighted Land by Gregory A. Coco. This one's dark. This one's heavy. I will confess it is one of the books that has made me cry, but an essential book if you're looking at Gettysburg aftermath and really wanting to understand the tragic impact of these thousands of casualties left behind at Gettysburg. And a much more recent book, and this one's unique. This one delves into the experiences at one specific location. It's called Too Much for Human Endurance, The George Spangler Farm Hospitals and the Battle of Gettysburg. It's by Ronald Kirkwood. It's published by Savis Beatty. It really delves into the story of what happens at the George Spangler Farm, and that farm has been restored. You can visit it on certain weekends, particularly in the summer, but a really unique book looking at that one location as a civilian home and really delving into what happens there when it's a field hospital. And there's a lot of famous military figures who kind of come through that field hospital as well, making it a unique story as well. So that is a quick run through of a few of my, can I use the word favorites with books like that? I don't know, but very helpful resources. And there's probably lots more out there that either didn't make my list or I have yet to discover because they've been published more recently.
Well, if that's only a quarter of your library, I'm already envious and I would love to see the rest of your library because those are some great books. But thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing the story with us. And I hope we can do it again. And hopefully I get to see you at Remembrance Day.
Thank you, Paul. It was so nice to be on the show with you. And it's been a lovely conversation.
Thank you for listening while you sat in traffic, jogged through your neighborhood, baking bread for Union troops, carrying wounded Confederates off the battlefield, or whenever you listen to podcasts. Love stories like the ones we share? Check out Military Images Magazine and get similar content. Specializing in Civil War portrait photography, this magazine tells the story of the Civil War soldier through the portraits they posed for. Link in the show notes. Thank you for listening, and I hope you tune in next time for our next episode.